for our ancient ancestors out in the field, when they were out picking berries, it wasn't important for them to know which were the 9 delicious berries, but it was important for them to know which was the 1 poisonous berry.
In this episode, I want to offer you a brain hack. A hack out of negative thinking that you may have never considered. In this increasingly chaotic world where your brain can be hijacked by news feeds and thoughts that take you down a dark rabbit hole, today's episode will offer you a strategy that is simple but incredibly powerful. Here's a tip. Ancient philosophers have treated it like gold, and modern scientists believe in it so much, they are asking for millions more in funding to study its power. But it's also so simple, a 3-year-old can master it. Welcome to the Brain and Brand Show. I'm your host, Timothy Maurice, your behavioral psychology author. Today, I'm bringing back to the show one of my favorite international thinkers and authors from New York City. She's the author of New York Times bestselling books, Gratitude Diaries, and her latest, What Your Body Knows About Happiness, How to Use Your Body to Change Your Mind. As mentioned in the opening, we'll be exploring a powerful brain hack, and Janice is here to tell us more. Meet Janice Kaplan. Enjoy. Hi, Janice. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me back. What an honor.
Yeah, it's crazy. Just a few weeks ago, we were together in New York. I guess it's still cold there. How are you feeling?
Well, I have a little bit of that New York cold here, but getting to meet you was one of the great pleasures of writing this new book. So making a friend while writing a book, what could be better?
Yeah, it was such a pleasure to meet you in person. I think out of 10 years, I've probably met 10% of the authors, and it's just always an absolute highlight. So I'm really thrilled, man. I really feel fortunate that this particular body of work that you published, The Gratitude Diaries, has done so well. I still can't believe that, whenever I see a book that's nearly, a decade old, still thriving in the marketplace, it just brings me joy to know you've worked so hard and the book has done so well. Why do you think this particular book has done so well?
It really did hit a chord. You're right. And it's amazing to me that it's been out so many years at this point, because it still feels brand new and the topic still feels so new and important. But I think every new reader of it is surprised to realize that this is, as you said at the beginning, this is all so easy, but it's something that we don't think about often. And I think when the world is always feeling out of our control, as it is increasingly, to discover that there are things that you can do in your own life, that there are simple changes that you can make, that there are simple attitude changes that you can undertake that will give you that sense of control back, I think is really very powerful.
Yeah. I mean, you are kind of on book tour at the moment. Do you still enjoy hitting the streets, hitting the interviews, meeting people on the ground? And if so, why?
I absolutely do. And this book tour has been particularly fun. I did it at a slightly slower pace. It used to be you do one city a day after another. And this time I decided to take a couple of days when I was going someplace and to follow my own advice. So I would go out and take a walk in a new city and look around and just take in the experience and try to appreciate the moment and try to be grateful, in fact, for where I was and to take in the whatever beauty or interesting surroundings I could find. There's also that great joy of meeting people and finding that they are influenced and affected by what you've written. And, writers who say that, this book tour has been so arduous. Come on, you've been writing a book and now you get to go out and have people tell you how much they like it. That is not difficult.
An author's publishing journey says so much about them. Before we dive into this specific body of work and, the gratitude, this body of work is important to me. It's changed my life relative to how I think about my day. My own sort of research into gratitude is something that I'm so passionate about sharing. But before we get into it, Let's talk a little bit about you and your publishing journey. Take us back to your first book and kind of how you've gotten to this point.
Oh gosh, that goes way back. I've always been a writer, and even when I was in college, I was a columnist for a couple of big national magazines. I was a sports reporter for CBS Radio in New York. And my first book I was given a fellowship when I graduated college to write my first book, which was called Women in Sports. And ever since then, I've been a writer, a TV producer, a magazine editor, and gone back and forth among those. And ever since I left, I was the editor-in-chief of a very big magazine in America, which I left about 10 years ago. And ever since then, I've just been doing nonfiction. And I got excited about these topics of I wouldn't really call it self-improvement, but as much as just kind of understanding the world a little bit better, finding ways to inspire yourself and others. And that's what led to the Gratitude Diaries. And that's what led to this book, What Your Body Knows About Happiness. And, you know, I'm fortunate in my career that I can just find the things that interest me and that make me happy and that make me excited while I'm writing, and hope that that energy and excitement that I feel as I'm discovering a topic gets transmitted through the book to my readers.
This is super random, I know, but for anyone who's, you know, listening on audio, they don't have the pleasure that I have to be able to see your wonderful style. Who inspires your style?
You know, I think I'm pretty simple. I'm just very straightforward, and I try to make myself comfortable and happy, and be cheerful in the way I look and the way I feel.
Lovely. You know, you opened the Gratitude Diaries and the preface. You spoke a little bit about how you decided to go on this journey and how you're feeling so positive, and then everything went wrong. So let's talk a little bit about that. Like,
yeah, you know, I'm allowed to be grumpy, just like you are, just because
yes.
You want to be grateful, just because you want to be inspiring and positive, doesn't mean that you don't have awful days or terrible moments or situations that you find frustrating. But what I discovered and how I did start that book is to say that what I discovered and how I started that book was to say that when things are going wrong, that's almost the moment when you do want to stop and go, okay, I'm feeling awful right now. What can I do? How can I turn this situation around? How can I think about it differently? And if there's something you can actually change, if there's something you can do, by all means, go out and do it. There's nothing that's saying that gratitude means that you have to just accept whatever the situation is. Change what you can. But there are lots of situations that you can't change, and you're still going to have to wake up tomorrow morning and put one foot in front of the other. So how are you going to make that possible? How are you going to make your life feel better within whatever bounds exist for it?
The way you structure this book is literally genius. You know, sometimes when I'm reading a book, I read just as a reader, and sometimes I read as an author. I mean, you structure this book with winter, spring, summer, autumn as the structure. You know, in this interview, I want to explore both sides from me as an author, as well as a host of this conversation. So how did the structure of the book come to you?
I started with the idea of trying to spend a year living more gratefully. And I'll be perfectly honest, after I left as that the editor of that big magazine, a large foundation, an international foundation, came to me and wanted to give me a grant to do something. And they weren't completely sure what it was. And then I discovered that they were giving a big grant to a gratitude study in the UK. And I made the foolish comment at that point of, well, if it's gratitude you want to bring to the United States, that's easy. And so they gave me a grant to do a national survey on gratitude. And that's what started me being interested in the subject. And once I had that basis, that really good background information, and I spent many, many months researching the topic, learning more and more about it, I decided, wouldn't it be fun to spend a year living more gratefully and see if some of these things that I had researched, that I had studied, that I was starting to understand could actually work in my own life. And instead of doing it month by month, I did, as you said, figure it's easier to do it by quarters and to do it in four parts and look at the four different corners that I could think of for gratitude.
So you started in winter. Do you think that was important?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I started in winter because I started on New Year's Eve, and that's the time when everybody says they're going to make changes. And it may be that winter is a cold season, and you don't have to suffer with that the way we do here. But it does tend to put you in a more negative mood, I think. And there's not a lot of sunshine out, and there are a lot of gray and dreary days. And so, if you can try to find a way to add some brightness to those gray days, I think it does help a lot.
For me, I love symbolism, and I do think you starting in winter was quite powerful. I mean, you have seasonal affectiveness disorder. You have people who literally go into almost like depression. And I think about the winter chapters of my life. And these are the moments where you really need gratitude, right? Like finding the sun in your heart, finding the extraordinary ability to see the beauty in, you know, those things that just are gray, right? You mentioned how you wanted to see how this applied to your life. How did this body of work change you?
Well, you know, just to stay on the winter for a second, I think I tell the story in the book of walking down the street in New York one day when it was snowing out. It was a blizzard, and I'm slipping and sliding on the sidewalk, and the snow is coming down, and I'm feeling kind of miserable, and somebody is out shoveling on the sidewalk as I'm walking by, doesn't see me, and throws a large shovelful of snow in my face. And responded not in a ladylike manner, I may say, and I got quite angry, and I stormed down to the end of the street. And then I stopped, and I thought, wait a minute. I'm writing a book about gratitude. How can I change this situation? And it really took me a moment. I physically stopped myself and I thought, it's snowing and somebody just threw snow in my face and I'm miserable. And I decided I wasn't going to move until I could get a different perspective on it. And I thought, okay, it's snowing and that nice man is out there shoveling. And I'm not going to slip on the sidewalk tomorrow because he's shoveling. And I'm in a neighborhood where somebody is out there shoveling. And by the way, he's doing it and I don't have to. So I should pretty much be grateful for that. And just thinking of it that way completely changed the way I felt. And I actually turned around and walked back and called out to the gentleman who was shoveling, thank you for what you're doing. And of course, he probably wondered who this crazy lady was who was now thanking him for throwing snow in her face. But it was so striking to me because that is the kind of moment where you just normally would get angry and unhappy. And it's winter and it's dark and it's cold and you're furious and you can't change the weather. But just that little tiny shift in your perspective, or in my perspective, was able to really save the day for me. And I think that's the goal that we should have, to be able to find those moments that we can save and that little step forward that we can take into brightness.
Now, early in my relationship, I realized how hard this can be if you are wired towards negativity. My partner and I had 48 hours of bliss, particularly because we had a picnic in the park on the Saturday, and Sunday morning we had gone for a run and we ran through an area that was just so stunning. We had a beautiful lunch, but we had a small little 15-minute argument. It wasn't really an argument. It was more like a disagreement. And I saw that she couldn't shake it. It was extraordinarily gripping for her to such an extent that I couldn't believe that she was buried so deeply in it after 48 hours of bliss. And I said, instead of rubbing this and highlighting it and going on and on about it, I did a little bit of an experiment, Janice. I asked us to go into separate rooms and record 2-minute reflection about our weekend. My reflection was all about the walk and, you know, everything that I thought was beautiful. And she spent 2 minutes talking about the 15 minutes. And what I did was I asked us to share it with each other and then go back into the other room and listen to it. And when she heard my 2 minutes and then I heard her 2 minutes, it stunned us. It was almost like we had both experienced vastly different weekends. And so I want to put this to you, like, why do you think, you know, some people seem to be predisposed to focusing on those 15 minutes and some on the 48 hours?
That is such a wonderful and powerful story. I love that. And I think it is so incredibly telling. Thank you for sharing that. I'm not sure the idea of being wired one way or another is the whole story. Yes, for some people it's easier to be positive, but I think probably it's also what you decide to do. And, you know, there are evolutionary biologists, as you know, who say that we are wired to look at the negative, that for our ancient ancestors out in the field, when they were out picking berries, it wasn't important for them to know which were the 9 delicious berries, but it was important for them to know which was the 1 poisonous berry. Otherwise, they did not become our ancestors. So we are all the descendants of those people who are really good at recognizing the poisonous berries. And your partner and many people focus on those poisonous berries, think that that's the most important thing to know. And most of us don't have to worry about that in a very literal sense anymore. And so it takes a certain amount of effort to say, let's talk instead about those 9 delicious berries, because those are what really matter right now. And I think that needs to be a conscious effort. And I hope that after your partner heard your 2 minutes and her 2 minutes, she was able to say, I'm not sure I'm focusing on the right thing. And maybe I want to be able to just put that behind me and focus on the joy and the happiness, because there is nothing that's true or not true in that situation. It's not that one of you was right and one of you was wrong. It's what you choose to look at. You know, I think we all become the spinmeisters of our own lives. And how you choose to spin that 48 hours into something of beauty and wonder that had a little glitch in it, or something that was all about the glitch, is very much your choice.
Yeah, I mean, she was right that we needed to discuss that particular issue. And I think our biggest takeaway was exactly that. It wasn't that I was right and she was wrong. It was that we focused on vastly different things. And yes, I should not ignore that particular rotten berry. What I should do is understand that the 9 plays a role, and that if I don't focus on that 9 berry, I could end up getting sick. And it's a question of how much you focus on it, right? That was our biggest takeaway. Our biggest takeaway was, you know, maybe I should acknowledge if there's a rotten berry, but also keep my focus on the positive, but she should also consider. And so it was about proportion. And I feel as though one of the biggest thing I've been thinking about recently is proportion. And it does not help to turn a blind eye to problems, right? But how much time you spend on it is key. And I think reading your book and the chapter around the stuff we own was very fascinating as well. Tell us a little bit more about that chapter.
Well, we tend to think that the things that we own, as you said, are going to make us happy. And we all want, you know, a bigger car, a bigger house, a nicer piece of jewelry, whatever. And we just yearn for it and think that that's going to make us happy. But there's something that psychologists refer to as habituation, which basically means you get used to stuff. So as soon as you get one thing, you just get used to it. It becomes the baseline. You get that fabulous car, and then you just want the more fabulous car. And you can constantly be questing. You can constantly be seeing what's the next step of stuff that you can get. But pretty much, it's never going to be ultimately satisfying. So you have a couple of choices. I think one choice is to try to appreciate what you have. That doesn't mean you can't say that, yeah, I would like something more, or there are other things out there, but to truly appreciate the things that you do have. And the other is to put the idea of stuff aside a little bit and to realize that it's so much more experiences that make us happy than stuff. And there's been lots of research showing that you go on a vacation, you take a walk, you have a family picnic in the backyard, even the weekend that you're describing, taking a run, going out for a nice lunch or picnic somewhere, those are the things that actually improve our well-being far more than anything you can buy. And I think that constant urge to buy something new is filling a void that is never going to be filled that way.
When you think about connecting, I mean, the chapter on connecting made me think about how you and I connected. I mean, we connected at the beginning of the year around the holiday period. We could have easily said, you know what, it's fine, we've met online, but deciding to actually make a real in-person connection for me said a lot about you as a person. And you know, I want you to share, if you can, I mean, this may be too much, you'll just tell me, a story about you connecting, because I haven't briefed you. I'm just gonna put that out there. I haven't briefed you about this question, but a story about you connecting with someone that may be an unlikely connection that's had a massive impact on your life.
You know, I'm hoping that our connection is going to have a massive impact on my life.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you. I feel the same way. I honestly feel the same way. And I genuinely, it's one of those things where, you know, it's funny because when I got the email from your team our first touch point, I almost deleted it. And I get so many requests for podcast interviews, and I just felt really, really drawn to it. And I'm amazed at how that intuition can lead us down a particular journey. So I also agree, and I'm really, really looking forward to where we take this. So reading in groups can be very, very, very powerful. And at the end of this book, there's a reading group guide. There's a 7-day gratitude challenge. Let's talk a little bit about the 7-day gratitude challenge.
Yeah, well, that was a way to say that you can put all this together, that I did it in a year, read the book, come up with these different things that you can do, and you can really do it step by step. You can actually take a week to really focus on it and to make yourself more grateful. And there are so many different areas to think about with gratitude. Gratitude at home, gratitude at work. It's some place that we often don't think about, that when I did that survey, which I mentioned earlier, we found that people are less likely to be grateful at work than almost any place else. And guess what? That's a problem, because we spend more time at work than almost any place else. So learning how to change how you feel about your colleagues, how you feel about the people that you work with, to appreciate those people and to realize that, yes, you can be ambitious. Yes, you can try to want to be noticed for what you do, but you can also appreciate the people who are around you. Learning to appreciate the food you eat, the exercise you do, the world that's around you. There are so many small steps that we can take. And I think I tried to put that together in a way to say it's not overwhelming. It's really step by step. And at the end of a week, certainly at the end of a year, you have a habit that really changes you.
Now, I've seen so many people start their gratitude journey and see how it radically changes them. You know, the neuroscience on gratitude, we don't have enough time to talk about this, but just know it fundamentally rewires your brain. It shifts your brain towards thinking towards positivity. It boosts so many chemicals and hormones that are profitable to your nervous system. Most importantly, guys, I want you to get this book partially because I know that it's easy to underestimate the sheer power of the little things. For all of you who get the books from the authors that I have on this show, I just want to say thank you. And the messages you sent to me, it really means a lot. And I want you to share this episode with someone you have written off that you think is focusing on too many of the rotten berries or negativity. Janice, I really appreciate you more than you know. I want to close this episode with a gratitude moment. I'll start. I'll give you time to think about this. Beyond being really grateful for you, I'm grateful for the people I'm meeting while I'm playing this sport called paddle. I am meeting so many. I think over the last 3 months, Janice, I've met people from Argentina, France, Italy, Ghana, Kenya. I've met people from Brazil. And it's just enriched my life. And, you know, speaking about connecting with people, you know, some of them is just we share a drink. I met this guy from Denmark. He loves paddle. Like, we are obsessed with this game. And so anybody who's listening from my paddle groups, I just want to give you a quick shout out and say you have made such a vast difference in my life. You made such a beautiful contribution. So while we're doing this, guys, please feel free to have your gratitude moment as well when we're done. Janice, anything or anyone you're grateful for?
Very similar. Being on this book tour, I'm very grateful to all the people who have come out to each place, but also to the people who come up and tell me their stories. And I often get thanked afterwards by the sponsors who say, oh, you spent so long talking to everybody. That's the joy of being out and connecting to people and talking to people. And I find it just wakes me up so much. And I'm so grateful to be able to meet other people outside the bubble that I normally would have of my
yes.
own in New York, and to see a bit bigger part of the world. So that recently has been a great joy and gratitude for me.
Before I say goodbye to Janice, I asked my colleagues what they were grateful for.
The one thing I'm feeling really grateful for right now is my family.
Should I introduce myself?
No.
Okay. The one thing I'm grateful for is life.
The one thing I'm feeling really, really grateful for right now are my simple creature comforts. I've just gotten a new couch, which I spent a lot of time designing and customizing. And just to know that at the end of the day, I can sink into my couch. Oof.
Janice, thank you so much for joining us again on the Brain and Brand Show, and I'm looking forward to having you on more often to explore more of your work.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.